Hey, this is Soma 79 with a special announcement. My new Mega Mix is up. My MF Doom Mega Mix, Oxidation Moons Day, is now available. Go to www.soma79.com/doom to check it out. It's a 30-minute mix that I did of MF Doom raps over my own beats. I really enjoy it. I hope you really enjoy it. So check it out. Tell a friend. Peace. Hey, hey, welcome to the newest episode of the Articulate Ox Podcast. I am your host, Soma79. Thank you so much for joining me. You may remember me from this same outfit and the same couch and the same everything from last week, because this is part two of my interview with the author of Most Dope, The Extraordinary Life of Mac Miller. His name is Paul Cantor. If you enjoyed the first week's episode, that's probably why you're back. And if you missed the first week's episode, then go back and check it out. It is available. I really enjoyed my conversation with Paul. He's welcome back on the podcast anytime. I feel like him and I could talk hip hop forever, and it's a real joy to talk to somebody who's, you know, puts thought into it the way that I do, from a critical perspective, from just a fan perspective. And I don't know, I'm glad there's people out there like Paul. So check out his book, The Extraordinary Life of Mac Miller by Paul Cantor. And while you're at it, check out some of my music. Go to soma79.bandcamp.com. You can find some of my music, some stickers. I'll be adding some new stuff there soon. I'll have CDs and vinyl and all that good stuff. I have my old album on CD there, so you can check that out. But yeah, thank you everybody for joining me, and enjoy the episode with Paul Cantor. Peace.
Meet Anne with wings clipped, quick to flip manuscripts, cause her man went from damaged kid to damn he's rich, but she still can't stand the way he manages to never put nickels in the can for the cancer kid.
So in terms of like people that you've interviewed, what I saw you interviewed Suge Knight, or
I did, yes. That was a while back, but I did interview him, yeah.
At what point in his journey was that at?
At the time, that was in 2013. That was actually the first interview he'd done in about 10 years.
Really?
I don't think he had done an interview since he'd come out of prison. There was nothing. Yeah, I was able to interview him, and that was cool. I mean, you know, it was a big deal. You know, the thing about interviews and a little bit of like all media in general is that, you know, it doesn't only very rarely does it stand the test of time, right? It has its moment. You know what I'm saying? And then unless it can be utilized for in some way,
things are more disposable than ever now, it seems.
Yeah. So that interview though had a lot of life. At the time it was a big interview. Nobody had talked to him in many years. They hadn't really, you know, had nothing from him, right? They didn't, you know, he was a boogeyman basically. Yeah. And I think maybe people were afraid to do it, or I honestly have no idea. You know, maybe they just didn't try. Maybe he was inaccessible, but I was able to do it. I know, you know, it's had a life of its own because I've actually been interviewed about that interview like dozens of times. I've been in like documentaries and stuff based on that interview, and I've had documentarians, you know, try to acquire that interview, you know, just because there are so few interviews with him,
right?
You know, it, over the last, you know, 20 years, it's almost nothing, you know. So,
and now is he doing a podcast from jail? Did I make that? I think I heard
he does have a podcast from jail with Dave Mays
from the source,
you know, from the source,
yeah.
And it's cool, I listen to it, I like it, you know,
check that out.
I mean, it's. Suge is he's a fascinating guy, right?
Yes,
I mean, like, the kind of guy you could be saying absolutely nothing, and you just want to listen to him because, you know, he's just an interesting guy. He has a way of talking. There's also a great documentary that he that was done on him. I believe it was F. Gary Gray who did a documentary on him. I think it was called American Nightmare.
Yes, I think the Cody Rhodes story.
And that was also really good. You know, and yeah, like, I mean, he's a fascinating guy. Would love to do a book with him.
Yeah. So speaking of which, anything that you're working on now that you feel a desire to talk about, or the upcoming projects, or
nothing that is really public yet. Although I can say there's some people involved with the upcoming Super Bowl that, you know, I'm working with on some things.
Oh, cool.
Book related. Yeah, I don't want to get that specific, you know, but you know, yeah. And you know, we'll be doing some things, I guess, around the Super Bowl in the book, you know, because it's such a big moment. And what else? Yeah, I'm just developing a lot of projects, a lot of, you know, documentary projects, films, and books, many of them like in gestation. So, you know, as soon as, you know, something's really ready, even with the Mac Miller book, you know, we never announced the book. When I was working on it, you know, the book industry likes you to announce things, but I don't really feel like anything is done until it's actually in front of you.
Right.
I'm like, I'm a somewhat superstitious, you know, about things like that.
Yes, I heard you.
So yeah, unless I'm like, I have like an actual completed copy of something, it doesn't exist, you know.
Especially in entertainment, because it's like anything can go away at any moment. Somebody who your publisher gets a job at a different house, and then they decide all their projects are gone or something, you know.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm more so like somebody that likes to speak things into existence, you know, in the sense of like keeping a little bit of a North Star in terms of what I plan to do. So, for example, this book, you know, which has been, you know, more successful than I really thought it would be. You know, my expectations for it were pretty low, you know, just not because I have low expectations of myself, but just, I just didn't really know what the response was going to be to it.
Right.
You know, I really, it's hard for me to tell, you know, when somebody passes away and there's like a big boom of interest, if they'll still be interested.
Right. And like if the fans are readers, it's like, you know, there's some artists who the fans just aren't the people going to pick up a book. So it's like the book may never exist, or like, you know, whether, you know, people go, no, I'll wait for the documentary, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the great things about this book, you know, that it's been really, you know, interesting to see is I feel like a lot of people who maybe aren't that into books have been exposed to it.
Yeah.
And then also there's a lot of people who are not necessarily into music or hip hop or really anything, you know, like they maybe just read like history. You know, I literally have like talked to like people who are 85 years old, you know, and they've been like, this book was something that my son gave to his son, so my grandson, you know, but I read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people's fathers, you know, have told me they've, you know, read it. It's really hit like a really broad cross-section of readers,
right? I mean, even as just like, and we've all dealt with a lot of us addiction ourselves and a lot of us addiction in our families. And it's like, if you can, you read the book just on that level, there's a very powerful narrative. Like, even yeah, if you were never to listen to a Mac Miller song, there's something to be gained from just reading that, you know,
yes,
especially in the beautiful way you've written it.
Yeah. Even some of that stuff. I tried to, you know, there's a little bit when you're doing a book, there's a little bit of like, of how much of the cards you're going to show, right? And, you know, you're a little bit like a filmmaker in some way, right? Alfred Hitchcock, right? I mean, of course, he's very famous for not really showing so much gore, right?
The horror, letting the mind fill it in.
You know? Right. The horror is off screen.
Right.
You know, you're filling it in with your imagination. Now, we live in a generation where people want to see everything, right? We'll watch ISIS cut someone's head off, right? Or, you know, Hamas, you know, shoot a bunch of Jews in the face, you know?
Right. We'll read about Vince McMahon, like, taking a dump on somebody, and you're just like, exactly. What?
But what I've always believed is that shock doesn't travel, right? It has a short shelf life. It's like you get shocked.
Doesn't
you don't
well.
Say, hey, you gotta see this, you know.
Well, just look at like how, like, kind of when Eminem came out, like Marilyn Manson, his shock just dropped. It's like, it seems like, because once someone else outshocks you, your shock stock drops.
That's fucking deep. That is deep. You're shut, you know, like, yeah,
that's
you're
going
right.
In the song.
You're absolutely right, though. And, you know, I never really have thought about that in the context of America. I mean, I don't know. Do people go back and listen to Marilyn Manson? Like, that stuff doesn't age well.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It doesn't age well. So even with the addiction stuff, the truth is there's a lot more that was not in the book, you know, that I kind of kept out of it. There was, you know, it was pretty messy. You know, with a lot of details that I kind of just sort of was like, yeah, we can show this without showing it. You know, you can kind of use your imagination to understand what was going on, and that type of shit. You know,
you captured one really beautiful moment that I think really summed up addiction, and it was, I forget the exact details, but I believe he was drinking lean around some pro basketball players, and he just kind of referred to it casually as like liquid heroin, and I'm sorry if I'm getting the details wrong, but like, and then kind of not realizing that like a professional basketball player is probably like not putting that into his, it's like, I think that moment like really to me captured like what addiction looks like to a lot of people, just being the slightly off thing that nobody's going to say anything about, but everybody kind of sees, you know.
Yeah, you know that story. That was one where you kind of see like what's going on, which is like, this is somebody who's like thinks this is cool,
right?
And you're in the, you know, when you're in early drug usage stage, you're still in the like, I'm cool because I'm doing this and this is edgy, right? And you know.
And those are words that feel cool in your head, but might not feel cool after you've said them too. The embarrassment and shame, you know.
Totally. And even when I was young and I was like smoking weed, I recognized that I thought it was cool, but nobody else did. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody smoked weed when I was smoking weed. And I started when I was like 12, you know. In fact, you know, those experiences shaped me, because as I got older, I stopped smoking weed. The last time I smoked weed was like 14 or 15. And then I didn't smoke, you know, again, anything until I was in my mid-20s. I went through all of college without smoking anything, just because I remember how socially ostracized I was being like a fucking little pothead. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And
what the 90s and stuff were like.
Yeah, when nobody was doing that, I was like, I don't want to feel like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck that, you know?
Then Cypress Hill came along.
Hey, it changed everything, right? Everything, made you want to be a burnout.
Well, just think of how many like big name rappers or like even Run DMC were like, we don't smoke weed. And now you find out about like kind of the details of Jam Master Jay's passing, and you're like, well, how do you balance those two, you know?
I mean, now, you know, the sad truth is, as much as I'm saying that I was somebody who kind of like went through all of high school and I didn't smoke any weed, all of my friends from high school became burnouts, mm-hmm. right? They either were smoking in high school, or when we got out of high school, you know, they were somewhat susceptible to the influence of college. Really, like, Right, fuck it. I'm going to start smoking weed, you know, and it got caught up in a lot of shit that I didn't get caught up in because I was exposed to it at a much earlier age, you know? So, I was like, yeah, I'm good. You know, I already know the kind of people that are associated with this kind of culture of like smoking weed and selling drugs. You know, I never was like a big, you know, drug dealer or anything like that, but like, you know, I sold drugs when I was like 13, 14 years old, you know, with my brother and other people, you know, all these experiences somewhat that are even in this book, I went through that myself, right? Somebody robbing you for your drugs and all that shit.
Yeah.
You know, like I know that was like somebody speaking their existence into my own brain and where I'm like, yeah, been there. You know what I'm saying? So hearing it was just like, you know, I'm like, yeah, that sounds familiar. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know this character, you know, I know this, you know, whatever this person might be feeling, you know, not totally, but, you know, but some element of it.
It's funny because it seems like Mac Miller can be so many different things to so many different people. I think that maybe is part of his appeal, is that you can kind of, almost no matter who you are, I think you can see part of yourself in him. You know, because it's like, obviously you and I come from totally different backgrounds, even though we're around the same age. And like, obviously we're exposed to a lot of the same things, like culturally, but like we come to him from a totally different perspective. And it seems like it's, and then I think about like some of the females in my life and the way they come to him and things like that. It's just, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, earlier in the, you know, when we were talking, a lot of it is just, you know, it really is a line that I quote from Prodigy, you know, in the book. You know, it's like I put my lifetime in between the paper's lines. And it's like when somebody does that and they just put it out, you know, you never really know who's going to relate to it or gravitate to it and who it's going to connect with. And it really is a matter of just having someone listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he was definitely a person. I mean, he's got so much music that, you know, I think there's this one song he has, like Thoughts from a Balcony.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
And I love that song. I'm just like, this is like the, you know what I mean? Like the most accurate representation of the person on the balcony. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, It was like that song was like plugged into my head, you know, and it was like taking my thoughts out of my brain and putting it onto paper. But somebody else was doing it, you know, and I was like, and we had, there was distance between us age wise, right? You know, we have about a 10-year age difference, you know what I'm saying? So it was pretty fascinating. But you know, listen, that's the fucking beauty of, you know, great art and youth culture that is good youth culture, right? Not like dumb youth culture.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like where you can't relate to it, where it's like it's just some stupid shit on TikTok and you're just like, what the fuck is this? Right?
Yeah.
You know, good youth culture is like, you know, somebody made a 3.5-minute song that, you know, is their version of their life that is sort of like your life.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you one more selfish question. I don't know if you have any answer to this, but I'm trying to find answers. I hope we get an answer some point in time soon. The Mac Miller and Madlib album. Did you uncover any information about that? I mean, that feels like something that, you know, I mean, Madlib could just let it sit around forever, but any inside knowledge you learned about that in the process?
None whatsoever.
You know where Doomstarks is or any of that stuff?
The only thing I know is that there were to on that particular subject, even though I'm kind of giving you a little bit of a funny answer to the question.
Yeah.
There were many projects that were started with producers. And, you know, there was like little groups of songs that were made with, you know, you know, packs of beats that were sent to him, or that he might even, you know, got in the studio with, like Pharrell, you know, like Pink Slime. That's like an actual thing. It exists, you know? It just, these things kind of were thought of on the spot.
Yeah.
But they were never given any real structure to how they would come out. Because
it's like you're moving on to something else. You're in a different city 2 days later, and it's like you're on to another amazing experience, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And lawyers have to get involved if you want to actually do something with it, and then it's like a whole thing, you know?
Yeah. So that particular project, I've heard the, you know, the you know, whatever records leaked and shit like that. But I've also heard, like, you know, a bunch of songs that, you know, he did with like High Tech, you know, and different things like that, you know, and you're like, nobody talks about that. Right. Probably because High Tech is not out there, you know, talking about it. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of that, you know, and my speculation with the Madlib thing is that, you know, Madlib talks like that about a lot of things, right?
Mad villainy too, you know.
Exactly. And it might have been one of these things where it was like, yeah, I maybe didn't recognize how much these fans was going to latch on to.
Right.
That, you know, what was going on there. But what I will say is, it would be dope if that came out, you know? I mean, like, even like his like unreleased catalog is insane, man.
That's what I was gonna ask, like, you. So what's your knowledge of Mac's unreleased catalog?
I mean, just stuff that people would play me when I was working on the book. There were people that were interviewed for the book who had copies of things. I suspect that one of the reasons why, this is just a hypothesis, this is not I don't take my word for it, but this is just my theory, is that the reason why there has not been a great sum of his music to come out is because it's very difficult keeping track of finding where these things are, right? Because it's spread out on hard drives.
Yeah, I have that problem with my own music.
It's sort of,
and even sometimes finding a computer that's going to work with it, like this hard drive that's from 2006. You know, it's like
it's on hard drives that people maybe don't have access to. You never even know. Like, I mean, this is just again hypothetically speaking.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah,
he might have had a computer that had a password that they could not unlock. Right, yeah. You know, like it's not inconceivable that is the case, right? It sounds so basic, but it's probably the reality, right?
I mean, that's why we lost Inspected Deck's first album, because of a flood. It's like sometimes shit like that just happens, and it's like, you're like, how could there not be a backup? Well, there wasn't, you know? It's just...
Exactly. So that's what ends up happening with a lot of music in the digital age. You know, I have... Privately, I've had conversations with people who have a bunch of his early music, mm-hmm. right? And they've asked me, well, how do I go about releasing this? I say, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Talk like, to the family? Seems like a good place to start.
I say, you know, you kind of know what you need to do. Right. You need to just do it, you know? But they kind of, you know, for whatever reason, maybe feel like it's not a thing that they... feel comfortable doing. But I did hear a lot of his music, you know, while I was working on the book. Now, I worked on the book from, say, 2019 to, you know, late in 22. So, you know, it was a lot of even those records, some of those people may not even have access to that anymore, just because it's 2 years, and 2 years in the life of the digital world is like a fucking lifetime. You know what I'm saying? It's on hard drives that maybe they don't have anymore. You know, you really have no idea.
It is crazy how much people, even if they have extremely valuable things, will leave them like right next to like like a furnace or something. Like it's crazy that like just because the normal everyday habits of people, it's like they're just like, all right, well, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like most things in life, everything eventually goes up in smoke.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's you have to kind of like get, you know, you have to expose this stuff while you have the opportunity to. Now, you know, in the case of like, say, Tupac, yeah. Right? Great example. There was a lot of his material came out posthumously, and then it was like nothing left, right?
And it was like, are you still down? The first CD of that, bangers from front to back. And then after that, you started seeing, okay, well, that was the best stuff, you know?
Actually, I think there's a new Tupac album that's getting ready to come out.
I did hear about that.
I mean, I'm interested to see, you know, what ends up coming of that. Yeah. But even like the Are You Still Down stuff, right? Some of that stuff they reused on other albums,
yeah.
You know, they kind of find ways. And then you listen, there's times when this stuff is in poor taste, right? XXXTentacion, right?
Yeah.
Passed away. And there wasn't really that much left over and everything kind of got utilized.
Yeah.
Similar with like Lil Peep, you know.
Probably Pop Smoke too.
Pop Smoke, there's not a lot of material. Yeah. With Mac, I mean, like, you know, there are people who are super fans who have the archive. You know, it's, I mean, I have it, right? It's like, yeah, 600, 700 songs, right? Of shit that is not even out. Right. And you listen to this shit and it's unbelievable. You know what I'm saying? Some of this stuff is like, you know,
it's almost evolving your mind. Why wouldn't you share this? It's because it's like, it's crazy. Well, not you, but I mean him, you know.
You understand why it never came out, because some of it is so raw and it's literally the exact thing I was talking about earlier about the specifics. This stuff is so specific that if it were to have come out, you know, it would have been, there would have been a lot of alarms being rung, you know, because it's just very, these things are like diary entries, yeah. You know,
and mentioning particular, maybe other famous people that he knew, stuff like that.
Not really so much name dropping, but more so, like just like what I would call life dropping. Right. Wow. Like, you know, and you look at some of the time periods in which this stuff was made, you're like, yo, this is heavy shit, man. This is a dude dealing with something, you know.
How does that with unreleased songs when you're writing the book and you're listening to unreleased songs, how can that influence it? Because knowing that the person reading it doesn't have the context of hearing those songs, like how could that influence your writing?
That's a great question. I think you kind of are looking for, in a work of journalism, you're looking for, in some sense, you're looking for other people to tell your story for you, right? Because the minute you start telling it, right, you know, unless it's really based on something real, you know, it can start to look a little funny. You have to either write from your research or you have to write, you know, from something that somebody told you. So in that context, you know, you would kind of like, you'd listen to some of this music from this time period and then you try to find interviews from that you did where you have people talking about that time period, right? And you kind of start putting it together. You're like, oh, you know, they're talking about April 2014. You know, oh shit, like this song is, you know, is from, you know, the spring of 2014. And you can kind of see actually a lot of like interconnectivity. You're like, yeah, this sounds like exactly what this person's talking about. Now, a lot of those interviews were done before I had access to that music. So if anything, the music was actually just supporting something that was told to me. And, you know, when you're
almost like second sourcing it, you know?
Yeah. Yes. It was like, you know, in some ways it was like proving something that, you know, cause when you're interviewing people, that's their interpretation of something. Right. And so you don't know if they're lying. You don't know if they're just making shit up. You don't know if they're just giving you their point of view. You know, you want to believe they're being honest, but you know, sometimes you need to interview four people to get one fact. Right. But, so I would do a lot of that. I would have like, you know, a lot of interviews about the same exact shit. Right. And, I would have like specific projects or like dates. I'm very into like, you know, timing, you know, like I would kind of like isolate on certain milestones and different things like that. Sort of like we were talking about earlier with the graduating high school.
Yeah.
You know, I would kind of like isolate on milestones and, you know, try to get somebody to open up about that. And then, you know, these interviews would be very long. Some of them would be 4 or 5 hours, you know? So over the course of 4 or 5 hours, you know, talking about it, they would kind of tell you in a lot of detail what was going on. And then you could kind of go back and, you know, you could listen to some of the music and you say, oh yeah, this sounds like a lot like what they were talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Has the reaction to the book, how has the reaction to the book been? How have you found?
I mean, it's been great. Yeah, it's been.
Everybody I know that's read it loved it. I've recommended it to a lot of people, and
yeah, no, it's been insane. I mean, honestly, I feel like a little, you know, funny, like talking like that because that's not really how I talk, you know, but.
Well, it feels like you did him a very fair job too. And it's, I think that it wasn't, you know, you're talking about somebody who passed away from drugs a few years ago. There's a lot of different ways somebody could read that book. You know, it's obviously it's unauthorized, you know, you can spin that word however you want, you know, but it's like, I think you're pretty fair in this book. And I think the fans, I would appreciate that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, you know, in all honesty, you know, there were some comments made, you know, about the book by his family, you know, to get people to not read it. Right. That's just a fact.
Yeah. It's probably helped more people read it, but you know, that's the way the life goes.
I mean, you would think that, but it actually didn't work that way. Right. It did not work. You know, it actually worked in reverse. Right. I think a lot of his fans did stay away from it. Right. They did not support it. They are still, some of them, not supportive of it. And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Give them time.
Yeah. I actually, you know, I didn't necessarily write the book, you know, for fans. I didn't necessarily write the book for anybody's family. I didn't even write the book for me. I wrote the book for the truth, right? For history, for, you know, dude, I'm sitting in front of a bookshelf. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody who sat here and spent time on one of these things, they tried to capture something, you know, a moment or something and put it on paper. And, you know, writing is thinking, you know, so if you spend, you know, 3 years thinking about something, you know, the chances are you're not half-assing it. Right? Right. You know what I'm saying?
You captured moments in this too that would have been lost to time. Even to your point about songs being on hard drives, it's like our memories are on hard drives, our brains, and it's like, you know, this, unfortunately, people go disappear all the time, and it's like this was a time to capture some of these stories, you know.
I mean, even with the stuff with the blogs, nobody's going to remember that he had a blog. Who's going to go look for that?
People barely remember it, a TV show. You know, it's
exactly. Nobody's gonna go searching for that. It's right. Other than like some diehard fans, right, who are gonna go searching for it and say, "Hey, let me see it." Unless MTV unearths that and puts it on TV, it's gone. Right. It's no longer gonna exist. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a wrap. It's finished.
It's basically research material if somebody wants to make a documentary, is essentially what it
becomes. Exactly. Which, you know, hopefully is done, you know, but
I'm sure it's only a matter of time.
But like, you know, in terms of that, you know, to answer that question, it was like, you know, it was very gratifying to have experienced a backlash to something that did not even exist yet. You know, because the book was kind of boycotted before it even came out. Then people got it and they were like, what the fuck? This thing is totally not what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And
well, like Dogma with Kevin Smith.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's when it kind of backfires. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, to see people evangelize for something that they were told to hate is really gratifying, you know. To this day, nobody's more self-critical than I am, right? There are things I see in the book that I know I could have done a better job of. There are, you know, typos that drive me crazy, right? I'm still, like Mac Miller himself, obsessing over mistakes, right? Yeah. In the book. And I'm like, I wish I did that better. I wish I did that better. The only way I can actually continue to live is to sort of create a little distance between it and myself and just say, you know, it is what it is. It exists, you know, and like, I'm glad that people are still, you know, checking it out. The truth is most books, they have a very short shelf life. The publishing industry, you know, is very first week sales, second week sales, third week sales driven. It's not unlike any other industry, right? It's like you do well in the first week and then your shit just disappears or not.
Right.
And this book is out, you know, week after week is outselling books that are coming out this week. You know,
get that Dark Side of the Moon type thing. Never quite falling off Billboard, you know?
Yeah, it was never a bestseller, you know, but it's been a consistent seller, and people, you know, outside of sales, right, which don't really matter that much to me, it's like people like yourself who want to like talk about it. In fact, you know, we're talking, but I'm doing another podcast like later in a week, you know, about this, right? And the book came out 2 years ago, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know anybody really that does this and is doing, you know, interviews about shit they did 2 years ago. The books kind of have a short shelf life. Just that in and of itself is sort of makes me feel good. You know, there were people who just from a sales standpoint, to bring it back to that, you know, there were books that sold a lot more copies in the first, you know, 4 weeks. You know, but there have not been, you know, as many books I've sold more books over that period of time. You know what I'm saying? And that was with people telling you, people, don't fucking read this book. You know,
it's a testament to word of mouth, because that's the only way that happens, is that, like, because the press isn't going to stick with you that whole time. It's not like they're going to keep reviewing it every week. It's like, it's people like me telling other people and they're telling other people, you know?
The truth is, I always wanted to do something like Kids. Right. You know, while I was working on this book, I actually went, you know, that was actually when we talk about milestones and things you kind of hook something around. That was actually the thing that I was thinking about. You know, I was like, I actually really want to do something that is just passed around, you know,
it has a life. And
I was rereading something, you know, not that long ago that I sent to a teacher that I had when I was in a writing program a couple of years ago. He asked me, what are your goals? Right? What do you want to do with your writing career? And I said, my goal is to write something that's not popular, but that people pass around to each other. You know what I'm saying? And this was before I was even doing this book, right? I literally wrote that to him. I was like, what the fuck are the odds that I would say that? You know, wow. You know, because at that point in time, this book was not even in my realm of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, right now, and I was just like, yeah, I would like to write something that's not popular, you know, that doesn't sell, you know, and that's just people pass around, you know, like I always was, you know, in awe of like books like The 48 Laws of Power, you know, shit people read in jail. Like that's like, you know, like, you know, addiction books, right? You know, people who, you know, there's a certain group of books that people who struggle with addiction read.
There's a book called The Sociopath Next Door by, I think, Martha Stout that I bought for at least 10 people. I think I bought it for almost every employee I've ever had in my life. Because it's just, that's a book that no matter what it is, I'm like, gotta read this, could save your life.
I mean, that's, to me, like, that is the highest honor, you know, more so than having a bestseller. You know, there's so many bestsellers, they're in the dustbin. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit, though, that doesn't matter. What matters is...
So there's a lot of pro wrestlers with bestsellers. It's like, you know.
Exactly.
And some of them are good, but not all of them.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to read the Hulkamaniac story? Right. You know, like, I'm sure... Yeah, I'm sure that's going to, you know, it's going to sell a lot in the first week. And then it's over, you know, nobody's passing it on, you know, when you do something meaningful, people pass, you know, they pay it forward, right? They say, yo, you got to read this. So I always been into shit like that, you know, and as much as there is a part of me that obviously wants to do things that are popular and wants to, you know, have a number one record or whatever. Right. The truth is I'm much more of a niche person, you know. My favorite movies are all things that nobody's watched. You know what I'm saying? But like only a small group of aficionados, you know. Would you rather have I don't know, what year did The Deer Hunter came out in what, 78?
That or Miami Connection.
Who knows what movie came out in 78? Would you rather be The Deer Hunter or whatever other bullshit topped the you know, the charts in 78?
Yeah. I'm sort of fascinated with, like, this is podcast because how did this get made? And they cover bad movies. They cover like a different crazy bad movie every episode. And I've watched almost all of them. There's been like 300 episodes. It's like Jason Mantzoukas, Paul Scheer, Gene Diane Rayfield. And like, I'm super like obsessed with this, the things that don't get forgotten to time, good ideas that like, you know, movies that have a few things that are really good that nobody remembers. Everybody's too busy being influenced by Star Wars and Indiana Jones. There's so much other stuff from those times, like Star Crash, which was like a ripoff of Star Wars. But I can watch that and go, okay, if that guy made that in 77, I can make that in my basement now. It inspires you in a way that like other movies don't, in like a very tactile way. It's like the forgotten cinema and forgotten media to me is a source of endless fun.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't listen to that much of it. I listened to a couple episodes. Tarantino's podcast was kind of about that, you know, which was, you know, just sort of, like isolating on something that is, you know, basically forgotten, right? And you know, I think as a, you know, a producer myself, like digging in the crates, you find a lot of things that people don't really, you know, maybe it's forgotten, right? Yeah. You're like, How did this record even come out?
I was listening to the Dollar soundtrack by Quincy Jones the other day. I'm like, I've never even heard of this movie, but it's full of this awesome old Quincy Jones music. And it's just like, where the fuck did this come from? You know?
It's probably, you know, yes. That's crazy. I got to check that out.
It was at my record store. And it was like, it was been on sale for like $15 forever. I'm like, today's the day. It's beautiful mint green, you know? But I don't know.
I have Quincy Jones' book somewhere back here, or it might be upstairs.
Fascinating, dude.
You know, even when you read that, you're like, this guy played on so many records. Nobody, you just know this guy. He's like Quincy Jones, but like, you know, he's on all these like classic records beyond Michael Jackson. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, with super jazz legends and shit. You're like, yeah, you know, this is kind of where I'm at with things, you know, is like, you know, trying to dig down deep and, you know, get that story. And that's what you try to do with the book is, right, like just try to show people a little bit more of like the meme version of what people become. Right. And that was really, you know, what I was alluding to a little bit earlier in terms of the inspiration was like, you know, when people die, right, they become a meme, right? They become like the Sad Mac meme. Right. Here's the dude, oh, Tiny Desk, right? They become this little moment. I mean,
Heath Ledger Joker, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, it's a little...
trivializing, maybe.
Totally, man. It's totally, you know, saw this with the Grammys and fucking...
Were you out there a few days ago?
Yeah, I was at the Grammys. Okay. Yeah, saw that with Tracy Chapman. People were like, whoa, you know, look at this artist. Like, who knew about this song? Like, Tracy Chapman had a whole career.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it rhymes slow, sometimes it rhymes quick. We all knew about that song. Like,
her career is might even be bigger than Luke Combs, right? Like, right.
Saying who knew about Joni Mitchell, you know?
So, I mean, well, you know, yeah, but that's kind of like the thing. It's just people don't know shit, right? Yeah. And, you know, even Joni Mitchell was like, people, I was in a company box, you know, at the Grammys. So I was with a bunch of people. I might have been with like 20 people. Mm-hmm. And I would say no shade to anybody that I was with because they got their tastes and I have mine, you know, but I did not feel like people knew any of the shit that was going on. They knew like Billy Joel, you know,
which a Billy Joel crowd,
which ironically was shit I didn't know. Right. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I don't know this Billy Joel song, you know? But yeah, they didn't seem that familiar with like a Joni Mitchell and stuff. And, listen, as I've gotten older, I just appreciate people just being into whatever the fuck they're into, you know? Right. And like, you're into, you know, Luke Combs, you're into, you know, Dua Lipa, you know, Billy Joel, Joni Mitchell, whatever.
Oh, I'm a huge Carpenters fan, and all my rap fans are like, my friends are like, what? And I'm like putting it on in the car and I'm loving that shit. I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
You just gotta like what you like, and then you know, you have some respect for what other people like. You know, I like a lot of weird shit that other people don't like, and you know, I don't mind if they don't like it, but you know, I try to give them the grace that I would hope they give me, right?
Right.
Which is like, you like this? I mean, I think this sucks, but you know, you do you, right? And I'll try to find some element of it that I appreciate. Right. So,
and the other thing too is like, to some degree, there are songs I like because they remind me of a moment in time, and they remind me of maybe something with my parents or something. It's like people like music for different reasons. It brings people back to different places. So it's, you know,
it's. I mean, this is you know, in media studies, right? There's a thing called uses and gratifications, mm-hmm. and it's a theory that basically. It's pretty much the accepted theory. And it's the reason why we're all in the world we're in now, right? The algorithm world. mm-hmm. The theory is that, you know, people utilize media in a way that serves them, right? They use it in a way that gratifies them.
Right. It's a soothing mechanism to some degree.
Exactly. 50 years
emotional ago, emotional regulation, I guess.
Right. They use it for what, there's all kinds of reasons why they use it, right? They use it to reinforce a worldview. They use it to, you know, basically get information on a thing that they want, right? They use it to,
I use it for, I'm someone who's obsessed with jokes and laughing and it improves my mood. I'll just put funny things on because I need to hear, sometimes I need to hear so many jokes in hours just to keep myself in the right mind state. I'm engaging with it, not really watching it, but it's impacting me in a significant way, you know?
Well, you are, you know, a little bit of what you eat, right? So, you know, you are the information that you consume.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, what you can see now is that the way people, you know, they gravitate to what they gravitate, and the algorithm is kind of giving them more of that. And I'm somebody that, like, I understand that maybe the algorithm is not the best thing for people, but the truth is, like, that is actually serving the way people actually utilize media. So the opposite would be, you know, sort of not a democratic way of, you know, consuming media. It would be like, I give you my speech and you ingest it, right? Whereas, like, the way people, you know, really use media is they say, you know, I don't want to listen to this speech because I don't believe in what you're saying, right? And that is actually more democratic, right? So, you know, on the other hand, you know, you have situations like we're in now where people get a lot of false information, you know? And so it's a little bit of a fine line. But music is kind of the same way, right? People kind of, they like what they like, and you just have to kind of let them like it, you know?
Well, let me ask you one more question that kind of ties it together, and I'll let you go. I've heard a few AI Mac Miller songs, which I don't really even know where I stand on that. We'll kind of see. But have you heard any that actually can, that you felt were convincing? Or have you heard any instances where people are trying to pass anything off as real? Or
I haven't heard anything. I don't listen to anything AI. Like, unless it's like a pretty significant, you know, record. Like, I think there was some Tupac ones I listened to.
Yeah. I'll never listen to anything more than once, I don't think. Yeah, or probably only a verse, you know.
He sent me like some Beatles thing. I was just like, yeah, I'm cool. Like, you know, I
try still to Uncanny use Valley of the year.
I try to use AI. I try to use ChatGPT. I try to use these tools. And I'm going to say something kind of unpopular, but I just don't find them to be that good. You think they're good because your standard of good is kind of low, you know? But I feel like anything I get out of ChatGPT is anything I could do myself. You know, I've literally never asked ChatGPT for anything that I've actually used. It's just been the most basic and banal shit I've ever seen. So,
dude, I tell you though, when I air fry some potatoes and I need to know the right temperature, that's what I do use it for. That's what I use it.
I mean, I know people who've used it to get jobs. I know people who use AI tools to make music.
Yeah.
You know, I just personally, maybe I'm a dinosaur. I would love to find a real usage for it. Anything that could make my life more efficient, I will use.
Yeah.
But I've actually, it's so much, it's a little bit like video for me. I would so much rather somebody just summarize a video and give me the quotes.
Me too. As I see how long it is, no matter how long it is, I think about how much time I'm going to spend on it, and I'm not interested.
it's like, that's what, you know, a newspaper is. They take a very big piece of information and make it short for you. Yeah. And they synthesize information, right? They say, somebody got killed. They go get the story. They boil it down to 300 words, and they tell you what happened. Right. Who did it? What happened? When it happened? Where it happened? How it happened? And in a best case scenario, why it happens, right? Yeah. Now, if you see some shit like that, you want to literally have me sit through 3 hours, to have me figure that out. It's like, I'm not doing all that work, you know? Yeah. I'd rather just not even look at it. So, you know, this is a little bit how I feel with AI. With the Mac Miller stuff, I know there are some Mac songs. I've kind of like purposely avoided listening to them, just because it's not real. You know,
I feel like even like the novelty of those are already starting to wear off, because it's like the other. Because I heard Mac Miller rap Eminem. I heard Jim Ross from wrestling rap like John Cena, and it's like, once I've heard three or four of those, and I don't even listen to the whole thing, so you're like, okay, well, I know what this is. Like, I don't give a shit anymore. Like, it's neat. Yeah, it's cool you got your computer to do that. But, like, it doesn't.
It's novelty, like you said, right? That's exactly what it is. And, you know, it's no different to me than, you know, the guy singing Purple Rain. right?
A chocolate rain. Chocolate, you know what's rain. Funny? It's funny you say that. I was just did a song with a guy, and you know, he's like, "Can you give me a reference for what you want on the hook?" And I sent him Chocolate Rain. He's like, "You kidding?" I'm like, "Nope, I want Chocolate Rain." And he gave it to me, and I'm like, "Give me Chocolate Drizzle." Like,
it's no different. That's so funny.
It's a good song.
Literally, it's the only time I've actually talked about Chocolate Rain, and anybody knows what I'm talking about.
This happened like 2 weeks ago.
I usually talk about that and they're like, what? You know, that's because that's like kind of like a little bit of an insight into virality, right? When you talk about viral shit in the real world, nobody knows what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. They're like, yo, did you see this meme? Right. Like, what meme? You know what I mean? Because everyone's memes are different, right? You know,
so it's like there's huge populations who know who Logan Paul is and huge populations who don't.
They have no clue who the right. who Paul brothers are,
or like Ninja. You know, it's like,
yeah, exactly, 100%. So that's kind of like how I feel about some of this AI stuff. It's like if you're dialed into that universe, you kind of know, right? And then it's a little bit of a novelty, and then you know, but once the novelty wears off, you know, all music and musicians. Who are great musicians and not karaoke style musicians who have one hit. They have some element of what they do that brings them into the real world. They go and they do a show, yeah. Right? They have merch. They are a breathing person. They are three dimensional. Tom Petty, right? He's a great example of that, right? You know, Tom Petty has so many great records, right? But if you were to just listen to the songs, you're like, yeah, this song's great. You know, like I can listen to this song on its own. And when you're a really great songwriter and great musician, you can make a record that exists outside of Tom Petty. The only reason why Tom Petty is who he is because he went on a road for, you know, 20 years, 30 yeah. years performing and going out and touching people. So unless a person can do that, the AI stuff is kind of meaningless, you know? Right. And so when people send me these AI songs, of which there are many people who send them to me, I'm just like, dude, unless you're really going to go out there and create a whole life for this AI character, you know, you're basically wasting your time, right? Because you need to give this a narrative. You need to give this real life. Real musicians exist outside of the song. Yeah, you know, yeah.
AI songs is the good use for that is if it's your kid's birthday and you want to get Grover to sing happy birthday to them. It's like that's like what a good use for like an AI song is, like something like cute or something that might make someone's day. It's not an art. It's like it's just a little thing that hopefully will only be a blip. But
that's a good point. I never thought it. Actually, should have done that for my kid's birthday. Had a AI version of, you know, Elsa saying happy birthday.
I always think of that in terms of like these things eventually find their resting place of what, like, you know, they're a ball in motion and they're going to stop and there'll be one or two things people use them for. And then it's like, it's just another tchotchke on the desk of technology that we pick up every once in a while. So,
like I said, I would love to find some usage for it. I've tried, you know, anything to make life easier, I would try. If I could get AI to write a book for me, I would be like, dude, fucking do this. I don't want to do this shit. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I just want the Tony Stark AI where I can go like, yo, pick that thing up for me, move it over there. It's like that I'm cool with. I want it to dictate and have it just do. I don't want it to do and have me dictate me, you know?
Well, listen, I think we're far off from that. You know, yeah, unfortunately. It's at least a couple years away.
Iron Man suit's missing a few screws, so
yes, it's gonna be a while, at least 5 years. You never know, though. It's moving rapidly, so we'll see. It needs to be, you know, a very basic product that you can get, you know, basically, you know, you should, until it's built into your phone or, you know, your Apple whatever that thing is, yeah, that they've been selling, you know, until it's built into that, it's really, you know, it's going to take a lot of work, you know? But Yeah, like, I don't know, you know, the Tupac hologram, was that AI?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know what
it,
I mean?
That didn't, I mean, those are, we haven't seen that many more of those. I mean, that, yeah, people thought that was going to be the next big whatever, but like, you know, it's just, oh, okay.
It didn't really pan out, you know?
No.
You know, so it just, you know, history has a way of keeping what it wants and forgetting what it doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
And, so we'll see where AI, you know, it's not new technology, you know, AI is old. I was just watching something. Can't remember what it was. I wish I could. It would make this, what I'm about to say, a lot more interesting.
It wasn't the film AI by Spielberg and Kubrick, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was way before that. I mean, it was like from the 80s and they were talking about AI,
right?
You know? And it was like, yeah, the AI developed this. And, you know, it's like these things have been around forever. They get popular and, you know, it's like crypto. You know, it's like,
yeah,
everyone gets obsessed with it and then it just disappears.
Yeah, ebbs and flows, you know. So. Cool, man. All right, I could talk to you forever. I mean, it sounds like there's tons of fascinating stuff you did we didn't even touch on, but I mean, like, I, well, yeah. Like,
let me know, man, when you're ready for part two.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. Like, go out, check out this book, Most Dope. And I can't wait to see what you're doing next, because I imagine the way you talked about, you know, this process of this book and, you know, what the response meant to you, I imagine, you know, your next project's going to be a wise choice, you know, some sort of good investment of your time. So I'm looking forward to seeing whatever that is.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely working, and there's things, you know, gestating, you know, just
when the time's right.
Yeah, you just have to, you know, the thing is, these, every time you do one, you kind of die a little bit. Even, you know, briefly for a couple of years, and, you know, you have to kind of pick and choose what you're going to die for.
Right.
So, it's, you know, when you, yeah, you get into it and you get really into it, and it's heavy. So you have to, like, you know, you got to really be sure what you're doing. You know
definitely.
What I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. It's, yeah. So cool, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.